Let's turn to David Julius, who is from the University of California at San Francisco. David, you're very interested in how the nervous system signals pain. And looking at your resume, this pot of bright red chilies I have in front of me is something which has featured very much in your work over the years. How does the nervous system signal pain? And if I eat one of these, why does it make me feel I've got a pain in my mouth?
Well, you know, the nervous system signals pain the way that Franz already described, that there are ion channels and other molecules that are activated by different stimuli, you know, be it a hot chili pepper, which we'll talk about in a second, or temperature or pressure. And that induces the opening and closing of ion channels to change the flow of ions across the membrane. When that happens and you activate the cell, excite the nerve fiber, say a sensory nerve fiber in your lips when you eat a hot chili pepper, that sends an action potential or message to the brain that you eventually perceive as a noxious or painful stimulus. So the reason that chili peppers are painful, and sometimes people think of this as a taste response, a gustatory response, but it's really a pain response. And you would know that if rather than eating the chili pepper, you chopped one up and then stuck your finger in your eye, and that would obviously be a pain response and not a taste response. And there's a pungent ingredient in chili peppers of the capsicum family called capsaicin. And the plant has, you know, over evolutionary time developed this compound to fit very nicely into a pocket of an ion channel called a vanilloid receptor, a TRPV1, which is, you know, pretty highly expressed, particularly on nerve fibers that are involved in sensing painful stimuli. As it turns out, mostly specified for detecting heat and inflammatory agents. And when capsaicin binds to this channel, it opens up in the way that Fran described. It's like a little donut that opens up and ions flow through the membrane, and this activates the nerve fiber, and then you perceive this as a pain response.
So in my nervous system, I've got lots of different sensory nerve fibers which are supplying my skin and my eyes and my mouth. Do different nerve fibers detect different sorts of stimuli? So we're talking about chilies here, and if I eat these, I get a stinging, painful sensation, but I also would describe it as hot. If I suck on a polo mint, I get a sensation of coolness. Or if I put my hand in ice, I feel cold. So are they different nerve cells that are doing those senses?
They are, to a large extent, different nerve cells. So this is, for many years, was a big debate in the pain area as to whether nerve fibers that detect noxious or, you know, pain-producing stimuli. Of course, these are stimuli that have a capacity to cause tissue damage. That's why we perceive them as being painful. There is a debate as to whether they're all, you know, the same functionally or whether they're a distinct subsets. And now we know really through molecular studies that not all pain-sensing nerve fibers are the same, that they're specifically tuned to detect different things. And so the subset of nerve fibers that detect cold are to a large extent distinct from those that detect heat. And you can tell that because the molecules that are involved in detecting, say, capsaicin from a hot chili pepper or menthol from a mint leaf are the same molecules that are involved in detecting heat versus cold. And if you look at where those genes are expressed, they're expressed in largely non-overlapping subsets of nerve fibers. So that's kind of like in what we would say a labeled line to some extent, that you have these different circuits coming in from the periphery that inform you about different sorts of percepts.
I mean, just ignoring the effects of chili for a second. So when I'm feeling heat or sensing cold, how are my nerve cells detecting those stimuli? What's going on in the nerve cell to enable it to tell what the temperature is?
Well, pretty much the same way as that we just described for these chemical mimics, if you want to say that, for these compounds, these chemicals that elicit these sensations. They're acting on some of the same molecules that are involved that are actually activated by heat versus cold. And so they do the same things. They're activating an ion channel that allows ions to flow into the cell. So when you touch a stove or if you eat a chili pepper or put a mint in your mouth, it's basically the same thing. And really what these compounds from these different plants do is to act on the same ion channels that are involved in sensing heat or cold. And what they're really doing is they're acting as what we would call allosteric modulators of the channel, which basically means that when menthol from a mint comes in contact with these channels, they change the temperature at which the channel now must respond to be active.
So it sort of fools the channel into thinking it's cooler than it is, so it discharges.
It enables it to be activated at a higher temperature than it normally would be activated at. And that might be, for example, the temperature of the nerve fiber in your mouth. And so now the nerve fiber thinks that it has interacted with a cold substance, but instead it's just being sort of fooled in a sense, in some ways similar to the things we'll hear about from Carl in terms of how light can mimic the actions of different things.
And if I'm unlucky enough to be bitten by a snake or a tarantula or something, and this elicits pain, are the venom molecules in these animals also effectively binding to these same targets, such as the chili pepper does, in order to elicit this sensation of pain?
Yeah, there are some. So, you know, venoms, as you may know, are very complex mixtures of all kinds of toxins. But we found, in fact, that there are some toxins in, say, tarantula venoms that target the same channel that capsaicin targets from the chili pepper. So it's a really beautiful, I think, example of convergent evolution. Here you have these two organisms. One's a plant and one's an animal, namely the chili pepper and the spider. And they have both evolved chemical defense mechanisms that activate your pain-sensing nerve fibers basically to say, stay away from me. But they do so by very different chemical strategies because the molecule in the chili pepper is a small organic molecule. The toxin in the spider that activates the same channel is a large, well, is a peptide or a small protein. And so they've converged on the same mechanism, but they do it through a somewhat different chemical armamentarium.
Now, if I eat a lot of chilies, and Hannah picked me up on this on Friday because she fed me some chilies she had in the office, and she said I wouldn't eat those, but I did. And I thought they were refreshingly spicy, but not over the top. Hannah said she thought they were really hot. I eat a lot of chili, though. So if I keep on eating the chili, does this have any kind of damaging effect on my sensory nerves?
Yeah, probably reversible. But, you know, people who eat a lot of chili peppers, probably if you're a kid growing up in Korea eating a lot of kimchi for breakfast, you'd be have a much higher threshold.
But what's actually happening? Are you damaging nerve cells or are you just losing the receptor?
Well, you're probably doing both. So you're probably what we call desensitizing the receptor, the channel, which means it sort of goes into a quiescent state. But if you put capsaicin at very high concentrations on, say, an area of your skin, your forearm, whatever, you will cause those nerve fibers to sort of wither and retract from that area. So there is some damage. Fortunately, peripheral nerve fibers will grow back and re-innervate those areas. But there is a decrease in their presence or their activity there. And in fact, this is sort of underlies a paradoxical use of capsaicin as an analgesic. Because if you get these bombs with capsaicin and rub it on, it will either desensitize the nerve fiber or cause it to actually regress from that area. And as a result, you've sort of denervated, in a sense, functionally or physically denervated that region.
Yes, I think I've seen people use that for pain caused by shingles, for example, haven't they?
That's right. And it can be used in very high concentrations, for example, for things like that or what we call neuropathic pain associated with viral infection, things like that.
David, thank you very much. David Julius from the University of California, San Francisco.
And we've actually had a question in from one of our listeners, Dennis Chakhaza, who got in touch via Facebook, and he asks, why does a toothache so much? What's going on there? Because, I mean, toothache is so painful. So what's happening there?
I think toothache's one of those great examples of how when you're in pain, you know, it's so salient, you don't pay attention to anything else. And you can't do anything else except think about getting rid of the pain. I think your toothache is painful in part because that region of your body, those molar beds, are very heavily innervated by what we call nociceptors, a subset of nerve fibers that are involved in sensing pain. So there's just a lot of very dense innervation of the nerve fiber. And then, you know, there's a lot of inflammation that occurs sometimes when you have a bacterial infection or some other form of tooth decay. And that adds to the problem by enhancing sensitivity of nerve fibers.
So maybe he needs to get some antibacterial treatment and also maybe listen to some music or read a story in order to... And see a dentist as well.